The following program is closed captioned for the thinking impaired.
Welcome, everyone, to the seventh episode of Chat with a Cat. This is being recorded prior to training camps before the 1981 season. We've gone through the draft. We've seen a ton of off-season trades. The unrestricted free agency period has not yet been run, but I don't think that's going to make a huge difference as far as how teams are built or what I would expect to happen in terms of finishes around the league. So I thought now would be a good time to start reacting ahead of the 1981 season and look and see how the offseason fell. I'm going to try to do this in roughly chronological order. And so to do that, I would need to start with the first big trade of the offseason, which came before the draft even started, and this was the Celtics Trailblazers trade, where the Celtics picked up Bernard King, the Trailblazers picked up Abdul-Jabbar and a couple of Celtics draft picks. I know there was a little bit of discussion around it, not a huge reaction to it. I think it's because King is 24, Kareem is like a decade older. And in terms of scoring, it's probably a bit of a lateral move, possibly even, possibly even the same. But, Bernard King was an all-league second team shooting guard. Kareem was an all-league second team center. And so you have the swap there, which now means that the Celtics are going to be shifting from a team built around Kareem and Elvin Hayes in the front court with Maurice Lucas in the back court feeding them the ball, to a team that now has their back court of the future between King and Cheeks, and will be working to put together a front court around them as they go forward, which, to be fair, with the age of Kareem and Elvin Hayes, they were going to have to start doing shortly anyway. Following that, there was the Brad Davis trade, where Brad Davis went to the Lakers in exchange for George Johnson, John Drew, Quinn Buckner, and a couple of draft picks, including the Trailblazers' first-round pick in 81. The Lakers sent their own 82 pick, and then a couple seconds, which I don't think have nearly as much relevance, to the trading stuff here. So that one I thought was kind of interesting. It was definitely a move by the Lakers to try to, improve their talent base. Brad Davis, if you look at what he did last season, I don't know that he was amazing, but he was really good. Last season, he averaged 18 points, 9 assists, probably just missed an all-star game with those kind of numbers. So the Lakers definitely have their point guard of the future in place. He goes along with World Be Free and Jamal Wilkes and James Donaldson. I know there was a lot of chatter that the Lakers are looking to win now, but I think they've done a pretty good job of balancing winning now with at least the short-term future, with Wilkes and Free at 28 and 27. They've still got a couple of years with this core. I'm sure what they're looking to do now is lock down their power forward spot. I did think they got a very interesting piece in the draft, which I'll get to when we get to the draft. That trade basically left the Lakers with exactly one real hole at power forward to fill, and so you could see where they were trying to consolidate assets. At the same time, the Bullets were trying to accumulate lots of smaller assets for the future. There's also a couple of smaller draft pick trades before we got into the draft itself. But I wanted to get into the draft because I think that's where some of the, you know, the big changes are on their way. With the first selection in the draft, the 76ers picked Buck Williams. I liked this pick for the 76ers mostly because in their division, they're already having to deal with, the Knicks drafted Buck Williams. I'm looking at the line here incorrectly. But the Knicks picked up Buck Williams, which I think was a good trade because the Knicks are in the East where premium 1-2 combinations are all over the place. And I thought Buck Williams was probably the most ready to go now of the group of bigs in this season's draft. He brings terrific defensive rebounding. He does have a great post defense score, and he's pretty athletic. So I think, you know, he's ready to plug in now next to Julius Erving and Daryl Griffith. You know, that was kind of the area that the Knicks really needed last season anyway. So I really liked this pickup. I was a little bit surprised that they didn't go with Isaiah Thomas, who most draft boards had at the top of the draft, including the mock draft. But I guess they've already got Daryl Griffith, and they felt that Buck was a better piece. I really think Buck is going to be in contention for Rookie of the Year. He's going to be an impact piece immediately. With the second pick, the Hawks picked Jeff Ruland, who's a center. I love his athleticism, not necessarily thrilled with the rest of his game. I thought there were some more well-rounded players that you could have gone with. And also his post defense is still very, very raw. And if you look at his post defense potential, it is a B, but it's currently only 43. So he's got a way to grow into himself, and maybe that's what the Hawks are hoping for, because they do have several other pieces that are still young and developing. I'm a little bit surprised they haven't flipped Randy Smith yet. He's 32 and not on the same timeline as the rest of their players. But I guess in due time, perhaps that will come. I was surprised here that they didn't go with someone a little more polished and a little more ready. Maybe they're taking the long view of things. But I still think by the time things are over, there are going to be 5 or 6 players that they are going to wish they had picked ahead of Ruland. So I'm not sure. You know, it's not an awful pick. It wouldn't have been bad at 8 or 9. I just don't know that it was the right pick at 2. With the third pick, we actually had a trade where the Bullets traded out of the number 3 pick. They picked up a couple of first-round they picked up a first-round pick and Calvin Natt. You may remember last year, Calvin Natt was kind of a surprise 30-point-a-game scorer from the front court. I think he's a little bit miscast as a power forward. He's a little bit undersized. But he is really, really good, definitely ready to play now. And, I mean, you know, he's only 24 years old, so he's not that much older than the rest of the class. And the Bullets picked up a first-round pick to go with it later in the draft. So I thought that was a really cagey move. And the Spurs, of course, picked Isaiah Thomas with pick number 3. I think most of us thought Isaiah would go number 1 simply because this was a draft that only had really one good point guard in it, and Isaiah was that point guard. And so you could have argued over, is this power forward the best? Is this forward the best? There wasn't really an argument over the best point guard, and I think the Spurs will be happy with Isaiah. I think Isaiah is still really raw, especially when it comes to his defense. When you look at his perimeter defense and steals, he's still got plenty of room to grow there. And so, and with his handles and passing, you know, he has A potentials in both, but right now his handles are only 31, his passing is only 64. So he seems like the kind of player that's going to come in and immediately make an impact. Scoring will probably be top 10 in the league in assists, but with those handles at 31 and being asked to be a full-time point guard, he might well lead the league in turnovers, which I think the Spurs are willing to put up with. Otherwise, they probably wouldn't have drafted him there. But I do think it's definitely a turn toward building to potential and not building to, I guess, present production. At number four, the 76ers picked up Larry Nance. I thought that was a really nice pickup. Nance, at least to me, projects as a little bit raw on the scoring end, but he's got excellent potentials across the board. He's very athletic. He reminds me a little bit of Daryl Dawkins light. And I think once he gets a training camp under his belt and some of his ratings go up, he'll be pretty good. He may just be, and this is me speculating here, he may just be the best player on the 76ers. I think, you know, I like his potentials a little bit better than I like Michael Thompson, because he has the ability to develop a jump shot where Michael does not. And so I think that makes him, you know, a stronger selection. In the real NBA, he was a multiple-time dunk contest winner, so we'll see if he gets in the dunk contest here in the NPBSL. Number five pick, that went to the Seattle Supersonics, and they picked up Danny Ainge. Now, Danny Ainge is a very interesting player. He's another player a lot like Thomas, and this seemed to be a theme with the guards more so than with the big men, where they've got amazing potentials, but I worry they're still very raw and they're going to be a couple of years away. But when I look at Ainge's potentials, he's got the same BA ratings in perimeter defense and steal that Isaiah does. The difference is his perimeter defense is already at a 67 and his steals are at a 77. So he's already a lot more ready to go. Where he's more raw, I think, is on the offensive end. And I don't think he's ever going to be the scorer that Isaiah is, but anybody who remembers Danny Ainge from the Boston Celtics of the mid-80s remembers he was annoying and had kind of a fiery temperament. And so I think Seattle has a guy that can continue to grow with their team for the next few years. And if they're patient, I think they'll be happy with what they get. Right now, I think he projects as a mid-level starter, maybe a little below average. But I think his ceiling is to be a high-grade starter. With the number six pick, the Kings picked up Eddie Johnson. And this is Darth's first draft. And one of the things I've always kind of thought about Darth, and hopefully Darth won't get upset at me for this, I've always thought he's been very enamored of offense. And Eddie Johnson is a future offensive superstar. You know, he's got A's and B's in all of the shooting ratings. I think if Chad puts some points into him, he could even, you know, burst onto the scene as a 20-25-point-per-game scorer as a rookie. Not as great on defense. Maybe that's something that Chad will want to work on, but certainly a piece the Kings can build around. You know, I like where he fits in with most of their team. I know Chad has been shopping some of his older players to try to get young. But, you know, you look at his young core, you've got Kaminsky at center, Sikmet power forward, Eddie at small forward. Even Alan Lavelle at point guard is 24, so the only slot he really needs to fill is Fred Brown's shooting guard spot. Fred Brown is a blue now, so he's got some quality. But he's 32, so that's going to fall off. He's not on the timeline that the rest of the team is on. And do the Kings keep him around? I don't think so. I don't know that the Kings are going to be ready to compete this season, but I do kind of get the feeling that Darth is going to start hoarding young aspects, and prying anybody under the age of 26 away from him is going to be like pulling teeth from a lion. Next up, the Warriors traded into the Jazz spot at number seven to grab Alton Lister. One of the things that we know the Warriors have been looking at for a while for is a quality big man to pair with Moses Malone. Alton Lister, certain articles on the site notwithstanding, is to me a very interesting choice. He is amazing on the defensive end. You know, you look at his ratings, he's got eight potentials in both rebounding categories and in block shots, and he's already at 95 in shot blocking. So he could well lead the league in block shots this year. but his offense is almost non-existent. You've got a 22 in the inside rating and a 6 in the jump shot rating. So Alton is a guy that you're basically putting next to Moses, and you're telling him, let Moses take all the inside shots, you get all the rebounds and do all the dirty work, which will probably cause Moses's scoring to go up this season just because he doesn't have to share the ball, which is almost crazy to say considering his stats last season. But you know, last season he averaged 37 points a game. You could see him challenging for 40 simply because Alton's not taking those shots away from him. The only guys I think could possibly take some of the shots from him are Mike Mitchell and the other Eddie Johnson. But you know, those guys are not the greatest on the defensive end. So I think if based on what I'm seeing here, it looks as though the Warriors are trying to go all defense. So if they're able to find a couple of stronger defenders, we might see Moses asked to just carry the load offensively, and I think that will be interesting to watch. I can see Liston, though, challenging for Defensive Player of the Year right now. So I really like that. I thought he was definitely the most defensive-ready big man in the draft. I think there are probably a dozen players that have better offensive potential, but when you're next to Moses Malone, you don't need a lot of offensive potential. So I really like the fit with the Warriors, better than I probably would have liked it with nearly any other team. With number 8, the Clippers picked up Rolando Blackman. Rolando Blackman is a shooting guard who is another one of these all offense, no defense guys. Super quick for a guy his size, quickness of 89 at 6'6" is really, really interesting. I do think the Clippers would be well served, to augment his offensive A potentials by investing something either in perimeter defense, steals, or both, just to make him a two-way player. I think he's got the athletic potential to be excellent on defense, but right now he's the kind of guy that's going to drop 20 and give up 25, which, that might be fine for the Clippers, but, I think the Clippers have a very nice young core. They've got Edwards, Ballard, Blackman, Brewer, and Theus, all of whom are under the age of 25. Well, 26, I guess, with Ballard. So the Clippers look like a nicely balanced team in terms of age and position. I don't know that they have the defensive chops yet to make it where they'd like to go. Pick number 9 was a bit of a shocker to me, and I suspect toward the rest of the league. 78 dropped in and grabbed Frank Johnson, who's really the only other point guard worth a darn. There's just such a big drop-off between him and Isaiah Thomas in terms of being ready to go in the athleticism department. But if you look at their ratings, his handles and passing rating are already better than Isaiah's. His perimeter defense and steals are both BA like Isaiah's are. And his shooting stats are in the B potentials. His jump shot still needs some time to catch up. What he doesn't have is he doesn't have the overwhelming athleticism that Isaiah has. But I think this might be a sneaky good pick because there were only, like I said, really 2 point guards available. Isaiah Thomas was off the board. And looking at the Rockets, they've already got a big in Artis Gilmore. They've got Larry Bird at forward. They've got Otis Birdsong at shooting guard. So really they were looking for either a power forward or a point guard. They decided to go point guard, feeling that power forwards were going to be a little bit easier to find. I don't know if that's the case. I guess we'll find out over the course of the season and maybe the next couple of years. So I can see where 78 was going. It just seems odd that they would go for Frank Johnson when there were so many other players that, at least to me, project better as offensive options or as two-way players on the board. But if 78's happy with it, then more power to him. The number 10 pick was Tom Chambers going to the Jazz. This I don't think was a surprise to many people. I think Chambers fits the Jazz for a lot of reasons, but most of all because really scoring from power forward was their biggest hole last season. Kiki Vandeweghe was manning their shooting guard spot, sometimes would slide up to small forward. You've got Dunleavy and Westfall in the backcourt. You've got Benson and Kelly holding down the center slot. The other thing with Chambers that I really like is, if you look at the Jazz, they have a surprising number of three-point shooters. You know, Vandeweghe can shoot it, Dunleavy can shoot it, Bratz can shoot it, Westfall can shoot it. Maybe not great, but he can shoot it, and Chambers can shoot it. So the Jazz might consider opening up the three-pointers a little bit more than everybody else does. The other thing I like about Chambers is when you take a look at his size at 6'10", a lot of the power forwards these days are running around at about 6'8". So that couple of extra inches, at least in my experience, does lead to slightly better shooting because you're able to shoot over guys, and leads to a little bit better defense because guys have to shoot over you. I think at 10, Chambers will be plenty productive. Do I think he's going to contend for Rookie of the Year? I don't. There are too many other options on the Jazz. His defense still needs work. He's a fine pick. He's a serviceable pick, but he's not, I don't think, going to be a huge difference maker. And next up, we had another trade, and the Spurs traded back in to number 11 to pick up Mark Aguirre. I kind of teased in the group chat that the Spurs are trying to reassemble the Bad Boy Pistons. And I know there were some people that thought Aguirre might be a candidate to go in the top three or four picks. I definitely love Aguirre's offense. I think he's ready to go now, which I guess is obvious with an 89 inside shooting score. And, you know, he has some good potential at offensive rebounds. What he doesn't give is he doesn't give two-way play. I do think he's a guy that could average 25 points out of the gate. I think because of that, he's going to be in for Rookie of the Year. The lack of defense makes me worry that he's never going to make an all-league team. He's going to need some training to shore up his weaknesses. He really is, you know, an A-plus offensive player and a D defensive player. But if the Spurs are happy with that, at least to start, you know, they have time to fill in those gaps. Next up was the Lakers. They picked Kelly Tripucka with pick number 12. And this was a pick, and I alluded to this a little bit earlier when I talked about the Davis trade. I know they were really hoping that they would get a power forward coming down to them. I was kind of surprised, based on who was still on the board, that they didn't decide to go with either Steve Johnson or Herb Williams. But Tripucka is, I almost want to say he's a better version of Mark Aguirre. I think he shows me with his athletic ratings that he's right up there with Aguirre. His steals are already over 50. He's got a B potential there. Jump shot's not quite what Aguirre is in terms of potential, but in terms of scoring, he's another one that I think comes out of the gate scoring over 20 points a game, and that's on a team that has Jamal Wilkes and World Be Free. Now, it helps that they have James Donaldson, who doesn't really do much offensively, playing the center. So again, I think I'm surprised that the Lakers didn't go with a big there, but I think they'll be happy with it, and what I think it gives them is it gives them some redundancy that lets them shop Wilkes or World Be Free to try to bring in that power forward. And if they're able to get that, I think they'll be scary. I think until they're able to fill that power forward spot with a true power forward, they'll probably try to play one of their small guys, whether it's Wilkes or Tripucka, at power forward, which will make them offensively scary, but defensively they'll give up probably as good as they get. With that, I'm going to take a quick break just to, again, kind of wet my whistle, recharge, and we'll hit the second half of the draft. So hang in there. We'll be right back.
It's time for your daily meditation with your host, Tim.
Hi. Today, let's imagine a warm, moist, tropical rainforest during a gentle rain. Let's relax and enjoy the sounds of the rainforest. Oh, look, there's a cute little monkey. Hi, monkey. And a trombone. Let's imagine we're walking along a winding path through the dense foliage. We're not in a hurry. We're just enjoying the sights, the sounds, the smells. Excuse me. We're just walking along without a care in the world, not concerned at all with the slippery mud underfoot.
Whoa!
Or the anvil overhead. Oh dear, looks like you need an ambulance. Hope it doesn't lose traction in the soft brown mud. The accident seems to have frightened the monkey, and the trombone, and the drill press, and the flock of geese, and the class of second graders, and the monster truck.
Join us tomorrow for another Daily Meditation.
Uber Nostrum!
It's delicious.
Uber Nostrum tastes just like candy.
I mean, it's tasty.
I enjoy the freedom of Uber Nostrum.
It takes the pain away.
Uber Nostrum!
Uber Nostrum makes me feel fresh.
Uber Nostrum improved my golf game.
I made $20,000.
I never knew love, and then I tried Uber Nostrum.
Uber Nostrum!
I haven't cried in weeks, I think.
You should take Uber Nostrum, just in case.
There's no downside.
It looks great. I look great.
I feel great now.
I feel good.
Good.
Goodness.
Savory goodness.
Uber Nostrum!
This is gonna sound strange, but I feel like more like a woman.
I feel more like a woman.
Uber Nostrum changes lives.
Thank you, Uber Nostrum.
Thank God for
Uber Nostrum.
Du musst mehr gut gefühlen mit
Uber Nostrum.
All right, we are back. During the break, I noticed that I neglected to mention what the Spurs gave up to get Mark McGwire. They gave up Andrew Toney to the Pistons. And, you know, the question I always ask myself is, when you're trading, are you getting equal value? And I think the answer is yes. I think Andrew Toney, you know, he averaged 23.5 points last season. He's only 23 years old. So, you know, he's basically another version of Mark McGwire. The difference is he's proven, and we know what he is. McGwire is, you know, a little bit of a mystery. And in addition to that, the Spurs were able to pick up some additional draft capital. So, or the Pistons, excuse me, were able to pick up a little bit of extra draft capital in the form of the Spurs first-round pick. So I think, you know, Toney for McGwire, Tony's a little bit smaller, but I think, you know, he's, again, a proven commodity. And picking up the Spurs first-round pick later in the draft was a good move by the Pistons. So pick back up with pick number 13. That was Herb Williams going to the Nets. This is one that didn't surprise me too much. We know that what the Nets needed last season was somebody holding down the center position. George Johnson did a fine job for them. But he's 32, and so they're probably looking to get his replacement lined up. Obviously, they've got Chocolate Thunder at power forward, Cliff Robinson at small forward, T.R. Dunn at shooting guard, Larry Drew at point guard. So I love this pickup. Herb Williams gives them a guy who already looks an awful lot like George Johnson. A little bit better individual post defender, a little bit worse in block shots. But I think it allows them to basically run back the team that went to the title with a little bit of extra depth at the center position. And if Williams improves in camp and Johnson takes a step back in camp, they're probably okay with that. So New Jersey stays pretty scary, honestly, with the draft of Herb Williams. The Mavericks went and picked Mike, well, they had auto-picked Mike McGee for them with pick number 14. You know, what were the Mavericks thinking? They weren't. That's why the pick got simmed. McGee, to me, I think is a project. He's got some decent potential ratings. He's got some B's in his defensive ratings. But overall, he's not really there yet. I don't know that he does a lot to help the Mavericks this season. I think this is a pick that really doesn't move the needle for me. Maybe I'll change my mind in a couple of seasons after he develops, but I just see this as kind of a nothing move for the Mavs. Doesn't make them worse, but doesn't make them appreciably better. And you know, you would have hoped if you're a Mavs fan that you were able to get better there. Next up, at pick number 15, the Bulls grabbed Steve Johnson. Steve was the last of the quote-unquote blue potential players. I can't say I'm terribly surprised here, given what was on the board. I think Johnson is going to be a little bit underrated offensively. He does have the B rating in his current inside potential. He's also got B ratings in rebounding, B rating in block shots, and he's already over 50s, you know, high 50s, 60s in each of those. He's incredibly strong and athletic with a 95 strength and a 98 jump. So I think he is equipped to come in and make an impact immediately. And I think he might have been a little more raw defensively than offensively, but I think offensively, especially on a team like the Bulls that doesn't have a big offensive superstar, you know, their big star is Michael Cooper and he's all defense. I think there's room for Johnson to assert himself. Don't be surprised if he leads the Bulls in scoring this season. I think he's going to be a sneaky good pick at 15. I think the Bulls are going to be really, really satisfied with what they get out of him. And I think for the Bulls anyway, I think this was a win. I think they would have been really disappointed had McGee or Williams dropped to them. But what this tells me is this was a really strong draft. You know, I think all of the top 15 picks, with the exception of 13 and 14, Herb Williams and McGee, are very, very strong players. I do think Herb Williams is decent. I won't say strong. McGee, I'm a little concerned about. But the top 15 picks, I think, all can make impacts right away. Pick number 16 went to the Trailblazers. That was a leftover from the Kareem trade. The Blazers grabbed Kurt Rambis. I think Rambis is very much what I would call a wig kind of player. And I know it's kind of funny for me to say that, you know, speaking in third person a little bit here. The reason that I liked Rambis, and I'll just put it out there because I've talked about this before. You may remember in one of my first couple of podcasts, I mentioned liking Joakim Noah because he had a high assist rating as a center. To me, Rambis eventually projects as a power forward given his rebounding ratings, and he has a steal rating of 87. So I really like that. It's a rating that you don't see that high on big men, and so that kind of excited me. Do I think Kurt Rambis is going to be a great player this season? No, I think he's probably a fifth starter, sixth man, and would probably need some training in order to get much beyond that. But for picking 16th, I think, you know, it's just fine. You want a rotation player toward the end of the first round, and I think that's what we were able to pick up. Next up, going to number 17, we had a trade whereby the Kings traded back in to grab we had the Bullets and the Sonics trading, and this wasn't actually for 17. This wound up being for number 18 for the Spurs. So that one was processed first, but it did give the Sonics access to 18. The Kings grabbed Jay Vincent with pick number 17. Vincent is a name I know. I don't know him very well from his real NBA playing days. But what he has, and again, I mentioned this before with the Kings pickup of Eddie Johnson, he has an A rating in inside potential, meaning he may turn into a terrific scorer. He's also got good rebounding potentials, although he's not there yet. So I think this might be a sneaky good pick by Darth. He's just going to have to wait about 3 years for Vincent to grow into those potentials before he's a regular 18-point-a-game scorer. But I really I like this pick from the offensive side and from the rebounding side. Again, to really make him a complete player, he's going to need some paid training. But at this point in the draft, that's kind of what you expect. You expect a guy that you know, maybe does one or two things well, not an all-star. Going on to pick 18, the Sonics grabbed Danny Shays with pick number 18. And yes, you're welcome for not making me wait to talk about the trade as long as it took the trade to go down. And with Danny Shays, you're getting a guy who's very, very raw, but projects to eventually be a pretty good defensive big. He's got B ratings in the rebounding stats, post D and blocks. It's going to take him some time to get there. So I think this season, especially given the other options that the Sonics have, they might throw him out there just to see what happens. I think Wayne Cooper is probably still a better choice in the short term. But you know, maybe they go with a Twin Towers lineup of Cooper and Shays. I don't think that's the worst idea in the world because it will give them some idea of how they fit together and whether or not they can build around them both long term. At number 19, the Bullets grabbed Orlando Woolridge, and that was after a trade with the Sonics to flip-flop picks. Just a points pickup. Woolridge, to me, is a little bit of an interesting case. I mentioned at this point in the draft, you're looking to get a guy who does one thing well. Woolridge has an A in inside shooting, and that's really his only noticeable attribute. The problem is he's only got a 42 right now, which means he probably won't grow into that rating until he's off his rookie deal, so he may be doing things for somebody else. Will be interesting to see if the Bullets are able to squeeze him into their lineup, but right now I think he's just too raw. He's a big project, and I don't see him getting a ton of time, even on a team that has as many, smaller assets as the Bullets that they're trying to aggregate into bigger pieces. At pick number 20, they drafted Darnell Valentine, the Bullets did. And again, Valentine has really, he's almost the opposite of Woolridge, where Woolridge is only scoring. Valentine is really only defense. He's got great handles and passing, good perimeter defense, great steals, and that's it. So it's another player that is really, really good in one thing. Is that going to be enough to get him a rotation spot? I don't know. I can see a team that has a lot of offensive threats, and here I'm thinking, somebody like maybe the Lakers being interested later on in getting someone who isn't interested in offense and just wants to defend and distribute the ball around. But, you know, what is the long-term plan for Valentine with the Bullets? Probably it's going to take some points to develop him. At pick 21, the Spurs seem pretty happy to pick up Albert King. Albert is not quite as good offensively as Woolridge in terms of potential, not quite as good defensively in terms of steal potential as Valentine, but projects as kind of an interesting prospect with B ratings and inside and steal, C's everywhere else. I think his ceiling is probably sixth man, fifth starter. I don't love his athleticism. Can he hang around the league for a while? Probably, but I don't see him being a real contributor unless he either takes a jump in training camp or gets some paid training. Wrapping up the first round of the draft, the Sonics picked Lewis Lloyd at pick number 22. Lloyd's fine. He's a good jump shooter, has some potential in steals. Reminds me a lot, though, of Valentine. He's probably just a six-man, maybe a fifth starter without some improvement. It's going to take him 3-4 years to get there. And then the Pacers, who had the best record in the league, also means they got the last pick, picked up Al Wood. I'm not sure how he fits with their team. They're really constructed around Joe Barry Carroll and Adrian Dantry. They're both young. Wood is on their timeline, but he doesn't really bring them anything they don't already have. He's okay in terms of jump shooting, C's and D's everywhere else. No great shakes athletically. He'll probably hang around their roster for his rookie contract, and then we'll see what happens. Again, if he ever starts, I'll be surprised. I think his ceiling is on the bench. With that, I don't think there was anything too consequential that happened in the second round of the draft, so we're just going to jump to some of the transactions that happened post-draft. The biggest one was between the Pistons and the Nuggets, at least in my opinion, and that is the trade of Dan Roundfield out to the Nuggets with Richard Washington and a bunch of first-round picks going back to the Pistons. The Pistons have clearly made the decision to hit the tank. They're going to try to accumulate younger, better pieces. They've got a ton of draft picks, whereas the Nuggets are pushing everything in for a win-now team, which makes sense if you look at their main pieces. Mickey Johnson is 28, Bobby Jones, 29, Alex English, 27, Brian Taylor, 30, John Lucas, 27. Micah Corin is 23, but what was this team missing? And it was missing a real offensive force in the front court. And I think that is, Alex English, I guess, played small forward, but let's say the big spots, the power forward center. And what this gives the Nuggets is a power punch between Roundfield and Alex English that I think reminds me a lot of the Joe Barry Carroll and Adrian Dantley combination in Indiana. It reminds me of the New York Net or the New Jersey Nets combo of Daryl Dawkins, Cliff Robinson, and to some degree, T.R. Dunn and Larry Drew. It gives them a strong, strong big man to pair with a wing player that can score. And that leads us kind of into our next trade, which was the Bucks, who got rid of some draft assets to pick up Billy Knight from the Knicks. Now, I don't know if I like this one, honestly. Because I think Knight might be a little bit overrated. I know he averaged 21 points a game last year, but I don't see any room for his defense to really improve. And his handles aren't great, passing is poor, and I think to some degree there was some putting up of empty stats on the Knicks last season. Maybe I'll be proven wrong. I just worry that on a team with Robert Parrish, Ray Williams, Walter Davis, and Bill Laimbeer, he's going to eat fifth. And there just aren't going to be enough shots for him to average 20 points a game again. I think he'll be fine. He's not going to hurt the Bucks. I just don't think he's the kind of difference maker that I would have paid as much as they paid to get him. Finally, we had kind of a smaller trade of Ricky Green going to the Knicks for Eddie Jordan and some draft capital. Ricky Green is a player that I actually I think is an interesting choice. He's nominally a good defender, good passer, good ball handler. He's a steady hand running your offense. I wonder if the Knicks have enough pieces around him to make it worth it. Obviously, they've got Dr. J. Maybe having Daryl Griffith and Buck Williams there will do it. Maybe they're planning on running a two small guard combo of Griffith and Green, which would be really interesting to see now that I think about it. I guess he does give them a true point guard, which they really didn't have last season. And so now we'll see how that team works with a true point guard running things. How do I think it'll work out? I worry that Buck Williams is good, but he's just not enough next to Corzine in the front court. And so I think the Knicks won't be bad, but they won't be great either. I think they're probably on the cusp of the playoffs. Maybe they get in, maybe they don't. But I think they'll at least make it interesting as long as they stay healthy. So that brings us to the end of the rookie draft and trades in the offseason. We'll be getting into training camps and preseason this week. Maybe there will be a few more trades. It seems like most of the big pieces that were on the block have mostly moved, but maybe we'll get a surprise trade coming out of there. As the last thing I'll do before I go, I'll do some way too early reactions to who do I see in each division. I think in the Atlantic division, it's really tough. The Celtics and Bullets, I think, are the favorites, but both of them have retooled their rosters so much. They've made so many big moves. I really don't know how to handicap them. I think, you know, the Celtics, I love their backcourt, not as sure with their front court. The Bullets, I think, have decent quality up and down, but it's a bunch of B guys and no A guys, at least in my opinion. So, you know, the question is, would you rather have a roster full of Bs but no As, or would you rather have a couple of A pluses and everybody else Cs in the Celtics? The Knicks might have an outside chance to get in. The Nets are always going to be dangerous. I don't think, you know, the 76ers are going to be much help at all. In the Central, until proven otherwise, you know, we saw what the Pacers did last season. Their guys are young. I think they're probably the favorites for best record in the league again. Although the Bucks did come on late, and the Bucks have made some moves to try to make themselves a little more consistently good across the board. So I think in the Central, it's going to be a fight between the Pacers and the Bucks. In the Midwest, you know, it's just so hard to see. The Spurs won it last season, but they completely retooled. The Nuggets and Mavericks were fighting all the way down last season to the end. So I think it's probably the Nuggets and Mavericks. Maybe the Rockets sneak in there. You know, again, they were decent last season, and maybe that surprise pickup of Mike McGee, or sorry, not Mike McGee, the surprise pickup, rather, of Frank Johnson is enough to push them over the top of the division. The division was so close last year, it's hard to tell. And the Jazz this year with Kiki Vandeweghe healthy, they could challenge too. I think I don't know that the Spurs are ready yet. I think they're too young, and I think the Kings are too young. They've got a lot of guys that need time to grow to their potential, but any of the other four teams could win it. The Pacific looks loaded as well. The Lakers made some huge moves. I think the Supersonics traded away most of their pieces for future draft picks, so I'm not sure they're in it. But the Suns won the division last season. The Trailblazers finished second, and I think neither of those teams got any weaker. The Lakers made some big moves. The Warriors with Moses and Alton, I think, can be scary. So, you know, it could be any one of those four teams. I'll have more after training camp, and we see how that goes, but, you know, I know that's not a lot of analysis. I can basically tell you I think the bottom team or two in a division will be. It's very hard to see who the top teams in a division will be. But there you have it. We'll go ahead and wrap it here. We'll probably check in again sometime after the preseason, maybe after one or two regular season sims. Good luck to everyone in free agency. May training camp not smack your young guys down. And until next time, this is the Cat signing off.